This feels like a grand entrance. I'm glad Ben was paying back to the time I was, or paying attention to the time I was just back there enjoying myself. So, anyway, good morning. I'll repeat the greeting from George this morning. If you're visiting with us, we welcome you. If you're not visiting with us, you're still welcome. So, we're glad. I like people with manners. Good job, Jim. I'm excited this morning. We're excited this morning to welcome the Lewis family into fellowship here at Dunning Park, and that's a great thing. So if you haven't had a chance to introduce yourself, please do so. Both they and their children are an exciting group. So we're going to continue on this morning in our series in Ruth. Last week we did chapter one. I was commended. I had told you my goal was to do one chapter and not preach the whole thing, and that's tough to do. Ruth's just four chapters. It's a very exciting historical account in the Old Testament, and quite frankly, I just want to preach the whole thing right now, and then we're not going to do that this morning. We're going to look at the second chapter of Ruth. Here's where we ended last week if you weren't here with us. Ruth's husband, after they traveled to Moab because there was famine in Bethlehem, where they lived, they traveled to Moab. They lived there for a number of years. Ruth's two sons married Moabite women. I'm sorry, Naomi's two sons married Moabite women. See how I get excited? I get ahead of myself. I've already got Ruth with a son. That's not till the end of chapter four. So Naomi's husband dies, Elimelech, right? Her two sons who were married to Moabite women also die, so Naomi is left with her two daughters-in-law and no husband and no sons, a destitute situation. She says, we're going to go back because she heard that God had visited his people in Israel and the famine had ended. She implores her daughters-in-law to leave her. They decide. Ruth decides not to. Orpah goes back to her family. And so we left last week with two main situations, and one of them was that Naomi, though she recognized that God is sovereign, that it's God's hand, that this calamity comes from God, that the famine comes from God, that the loss of her husband and sons ultimately comes from God. And she, though she recognizes God's sovereignty, she fails to grasp or to rest in that. Okay, we talked about that last week, that God being sovereign over the affairs of, not just the affairs of nations, right, but also the affairs of individuals and the affairs of families, that even in difficult times, as we sang this morning, that sovereignty and that providence of God should give us peace. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't be honest about the way we feel. And Naomi was honest, wasn't she? I mean, she said flat out that she didn't like it. She didn't like her circumstances. She was not happy. That's okay. That's okay to be honest. But we left the end of chapter one last week with Naomi being very bitter about her circumstances. And because of being so bitter, she was failing to realize that even in her calamity, that God was already showing signs of mercy, right? Okay, and we also left with Ruth having made a beautiful speech of commitment when she refused to leave Naomi. She made a beautiful speech of commitment not only to Naomi, but to the God of Israel. She said, where you go, I'll go. Okay, and your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. That's not just some poetic overture. That was Ruth, in fact, surrendering her entire existence to the God of Israel. Remember, we said she, as far as she knew, was committing herself to a life of poverty. As far as she knew, she was committing herself to a life of widowhood. And as far as she knew, she was therefore committing herself to a life of childlessness. And she was surrendering all of that to the God of Israel. So she goes to, now we have Naomi and Ruth back in Bethlehem. And when did we say that they returned or were returning or entering into Bethlehem, into Israel? They were coming back at the beginning of the barley harvest. And I pointed that out last week, that is in fact already a tremendous blessing. It's a tremendous blessing. So if you turn with me to Ruth, we're going to take a look at Ruth chapter 2. If you're looking at it in the black hardcover Bible there in your pew, that's page 277. So we take a look at this second chapter of Ruth. Now, in the beginning of this second chapter, we ended the first chapter with the statement that they came back just as the barley harvest was beginning. And this is after Ruth being very, very bitter. And we open the second chapter with an interesting note from the author. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. Now, we're going to leave Boaz alone for just a minute, although I hope you're excited to meet this guy because Boaz is awesome. He is awesome. But we're going to leave Boaz alone for just a moment, but I want to just point out the statement being where it is, that at the end of this last chapter, the close of this last scene with Naomi, she has warned her daughters-in-law that she has nothing to offer them. She has warned her daughters-in-law that she has no ability to provide new sons for them to have husbands and find rest. Remember that word? Naomi said it more than one time. I pray that you would find rest. Go back to your mother's households that you may find rest. And we understood from our study that rest that she wanted them to find was in fact the rest of security in having another husband, in that somebody who could provide for them. And she says, I have nothing to offer. It can't happen, right? Now, sometimes in our frustration or our unhappiness or our sadness with our circumstances, we make ourselves blind to not only what the Lord is doing, but we make ourselves numb to or blind to our history with the Lord, that we might have hope in what the Lord could do. That we might have hope in what expectation in our lives of what the Lord will do. We've seen the Lord in our lives do wonderful things, not only ultimately for his glory, but also with our good in mind. We read in the New Testament that we're reminded that the Lord disciplines those that he loves, right? And yet, even in our discipline, God has mercy. Remember, we touched on that last week. We don't really know from the text whether the death of Elimelech and his sons was an act of discipline from the Lord because they went to Moab, or if it was simply in the providence of God in the course of time. But that if it were discipline from the Lord, if their calamity were a punitive action for correction, would that not make the story of Ruth all the more beautiful? So we see now that she has been blind, and I think the author is bringing that to our attention, that she has, in her bitterness, she has failed to live expectantly at what the Lord might do, because the author puts up, now by the way, there is a relative that could make a difference here, right? So the author just throws that up. So now we go back to the narrative. We're going to leave Boaz alone for just a minute. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. And we're going to pause right there for a second. Remember, we said that it was God's mercy, in God's providence, in God's timing, that these two women were returning to Israel in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Why? Well, because they're destitute, right? They have no means by which to provide for themselves or to be provided for, save one. And that is, we read in Leviticus, we read it in several places, in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, but specifically, if you're taking notes, Leviticus 19, and Leviticus 23 is this wonderful provision that God instituted for the nation of Israel to provide for those who were poor, who were destitute, specifically also those who were widows. and didn't have means or family who had means to provide for them. And that is that during this harvest, that they were to leave the corners, so to speak, they were to leave the corners of their fields, and they were not to harvest all the way to the edges. They were not to harvest all the way to the edges. And that was so that somebody like Ruth or Naomi had the opportunity to go into that field behind the harvesters, and there was grain left over for food that they could harvest for themselves, or they could glean what was dropped and left behind after the harvesters went through. And in that way, the nation of Israel, that God, through the nation of Israel, he instituted this so that people who were poor could go out and provide for themselves. Okay? This is the only way that these two women could do that, because there wasn't at this time anybody to provide for them. So she goes out. Now, I think it's worth noting here that she goes and does this sort of with permission from her mother-in-law. We're going to see, beginning now and throughout the course of this chapter in particular, an interesting thing, or one of the interesting things about Ruth is her sincere humility. Her sincere humility. So she asks Naomi, can I go do this? Naomi says, yeah, go ahead. So she goes out and she's gleaning. And then we see in chapter 2, in verse 3, as it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. As it turned out. Right? As it turned out. Now, to us, in our lives, that is, if we're honest, if I'm honest, that's the way I see things sometimes. Can you believe this coincidence? All right, I'll find myself saying, wow, what a coincidence. Isn't that crazy? Well, we have the benefit of hindsight as we're reading this book, so when I read the words, as it turned out, I sort of chuckle. But honestly, that's the way I see things sometimes. But we're seeing now, again, God's providence and God's timing in this whole thing. Now, in verse 1 of chapter 2, or we're going to go back, and it's interesting that they refer, in the NIV it refers to Elimelech as a man of standing. A man of standing. Now, that phrase, man of standing, is translated a lot of ways in the Old Testament. Okay, just to give you a couple. It's translated man of valor in 1 Samuel 16. It's translated mighty man in 1 Chronicles 28. And elsewhere, man of wealth. Okay, so this idea, Boaz is a man of standing. Boaz is a mighty man. Boaz is a man of valor. The idea being that this isn't just somebody who's wealthy. So when we read man of standing, that's the first kind of thought that comes to my mind. He's a man of standing. Oh, he's a man of wealth. And he is. But the phrase means so much more than that. It speaks to the character of the man, okay, to his uprightness and to his strength of character. In a sense, I mean, Boaz, he's a little bit of an older guy, and those of us older guys kind of appreciate Boaz because he's still kind of a stud, right? I mean, no. Boaz, he's the real deal. He's a man's man, but he's not a man's man in some sort of gruff way or crude way. What we're going to find out is that he's a man's man, and he's a man of valor because he's God's man. Because he's God's man. Let's read on together. Just then, right, so take as it turns out, and just then, and keep those two things in mind. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, whose young woman is that? The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. Now, remember when they came back into Bethlehem and the whole town was stirred because of them, as the text said? So this report of not only their return is being made known, but the report of the nature of their relationship has been made known. So Boaz hadn't, maybe he'd heard of her already, maybe he hadn't, or actually we're going to see that he did, but he hadn't set eyes on her yet, so he doesn't know who she is. She's clearly a foreigner. So whose young woman is this? So the foreman tells her, you know, that's Ruth. That's the Moabitess who came back with Naomi. And then he gives the report of his interaction with her in verse 4. I'm sorry, in verse 7. She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters." So she came, and she didn't say, "I know your laws. I know, you know, from my late husband, from my late father-in-law, from my mother-in-law, I know about the laws of the harvest, and I know you're supposed to leave these corners, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to glean behind your harvesters like the law says." No. She comes with humility, and she asks permission. So then the foreman continues. "She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So this is where I really start to love Ruth, right? She is an industrious, industrious young woman. First of all, she rises up. Her mother-in-law is sort of wallowing in her bitterness, right? She says, "I've gone away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty." And Ruth says, this is Erickson, you know, paraphrase, right? "I'm young, I'm strong, and I'm capable, and I'm going to go to work. Is it okay if I go to work? I'm going to go to work. I'm going to go glean after the harvesters." She comes and she says, "Please, may I glean after the harvesters. May I glean among and gather among the sheaves after the harvesters have gone through." She obviously received that permission. And then the report of the foreman to Boaz about her is, "This young woman has worked today. She has worked. She has not stopped except for one short rest in the shelter. She has not stopped working." Ruth reminds me very much of that wife of noble character, right? She reminds me very much of that Proverbs woman. In fact, one commentator used the quote from Proverbs regarding her, saying she is, this is Proverbs 31 and verse 25, "She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come." Now, the days for Ruth right now and Naomi, they're not really anything that we would smile and laugh, right? This was legitimate hardship. This was legitimate poverty. And again, we said Ruth had committed herself to what, all for all she knew, were not going to be some very good days to come. They were not going to be days of ease. They were not going to be days of material blessing or wealth, as far as she was aware. And yet she's very much like that Proverbs 31 woman, wife of noble character, that she clothes herself in dignity and she can laugh at the days to come. Because she's going to, number one, she's entrusted herself to the God of Israel and therefore his people. And she's going to roll up her sleeves and she's going to go about her business. And she is already seeing that she's being provided for. So, okay, so here we have Boaz goes to Ruth and says, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I've told the men not to touch you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." Now that phrase struck me the first time I had gone back to read Ruth in preparation for this series, when he says, "I've instructed the men not to touch you." See, we have to remember that this is part of the danger and tough situation for Naomi and Ruth, but specifically for Ruth. Ruth, it would have been very obvious that she was a foreigner, right? You know, maybe she you know, spoke some of the language because of being in her father and mother-in-law's household, part of that household for so many years, and married to an Israelite man. But maybe her speech was a little broken, as we might call it. Certainly her appearance would have looked differently. Maybe something about her dress would have looked differently, but it would have been very obvious that she was a foreigner and not an Israelite. And so we have this bunch of guys out working in the field all day long harvesting, and along comes this woman who's a foreigner, and the Israelites would have not thought very highly of her anyway, right, being a Moabitess. So there was real danger. And so Boaz offers her protection. This is the first thing that we see in this interaction between Ruth and Boaz, is that Boaz, this man of valor, right, this man of standing, says, don't go into another field. Stay here and glean after my harvesters. Stay with my servant girls, okay? I've told the men not to touch you, and whenever you're thirsty, feel free to go drink from the water jars that have been drawn for my workers, okay? So he offers her that protection. You don't have to go look anywhere else. You're welcome here. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May the Lord richly, may you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So as we're learning about Ruth and Boaz here, it's interesting to note, again, Ruth's humility. Ruth's humility. Piper, in a commentary, talks about the humility of Ruth and says this, that humble people are always further humbled by the kindness when they receive it. Humble people don't expect kindness or graciousness as a right. Humble people are sincerely appreciative when kindness and graciousness comes their way. And that's what we see from Ruth here. Why have I found such favor in your sight that you notice me a foreigner? Ruth is saying, I have no right to such kindness. And so Boaz goes on to tell her that he's heard all about her. But it's interesting, though, that I think it's noteworthy, and I think we have to be careful that we don't let this text teach us that simply that Ruth, through her industrious character, has somehow earned favor with God and man just through her industriousness and just through her actions. Because Boaz also knows of her that she's come to seek shelter under the wings of the God of Israel. So we sort of reverse engineer the text, for lack of a better way to put it. If we go to the end of Boaz's comment, we get some understanding of Boaz, because Boaz prays blessing upon her and prays that she be richly rewarded, having come to seek shelter under the wings of the God of Israel, having come to seek shelter under the protection of the God of Israel, that the result, the Ruth's blessing comes from her faith in the Lord. Yeah, she has done her part. A good friend of mine said, you know, recently that, yes, I totally believe in God's sovereignty and totally rest in God's sovereignty, but we do have our role to play. And so Ruth has played her role very well. But Boaz's prayer and blessing to Ruth are namely because of her coming to seek shelter under the refuge under the wing of the God of Israel, which is that's a figure of speech used constantly, many, many times in the Old Testament. And it's this idea of the wings of the eagle that would protect and shelter eaglets. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lord, she said. You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have standing of one of your servant girls. Again, I don't even have the standing here that one of your servant girls has, and yet you've treated me so well. So they sit for the meal. Boaz invites her to the meal. Boaz gives her bread. She's already been given water. Boaz says, come dip your bread in the oil. So he is blessing her, and it talks about how Ruth ate just until she was satisfied and she had some left over. We're going to see the result of that a little bit later. So we've learned some things about the character of Ruth. Learn this about the character of Boaz too, though. And this is a lesson that we need to walk away with from this chapter. Boaz prays blessing. May the Lord repay you. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel. And then Boaz does what? Boaz happily becomes God's instrument in that blessing. Do you see that? Now, we read in the New Testament in James, what good does it do if you tell someone, you know, someone that has need, go be warm and well fed. I pray that you would go be warm and well fed, and yet you do nothing to provide for them. What good was that? Right? If we see need, and we just simply pray that that need be met, when we ourselves could be that God's instrument in meeting that need, right? And Boaz does that. Remember this man of standing, this man of valor, this mighty man of character? Again, in his commentary, Piper refers to Boaz as a God-saturated man. I love that phrase, God-saturated man, in all that he does. And so Boaz very sincerely prays blessing on Ruth as he is in the midst of being God's instrument to provide that blessing. He says, hey, again, this is somebody who has an understanding of God's providence. She's here, just happened to be here, right? And so he provides protection for her. He provides continued work and the ability to provide for herself for her. He treats her as well as he treats his own employees. He feeds her and cares for her, gives her water to drink, gives her a place to have rest. So when we see need and we say, Lord, please bless this person, when we have the opportunity to be God's instrument, we should be so as well. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. This is in verse 17. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it accounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. So Ruth gets done gleaning. Ruth sort of threshes out, sort of beats her own gatherings, right, to separate the chaff from the barley. She gathers it all up, and she herself carries it back to town. Right? She probably could have asked for help, right? She just does it. She gets it all separated out. She gets it all gathered up. She's gathered about enough to feed the two of them for nearly a couple of weeks in one long, hard day of labor, right? And when she was invited to the meal and sat down, she ate just enough to sustain her for her continued work, and then brought the remainders of her portion of that meal back to Naomi so that she could eat immediately of what Ruth had left over. It's an impressive young woman. Impressive young woman. Her mother-in-law asked her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Now, why would Naomi assume that some man had taken notice of Ruth? Because Ruth brought back way more than Naomi had anticipated her getting, right? Ruth brought back a lot more. Because when she got up, she was done eating, Boaz gave orders to his men. Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks from her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her. Boaz had gone over and above even the requirements of the law to provide and allow for provision for somebody like Ruth. She was just supposed to glean what was left over. And yeah, they were supposed to leave some for her to glean from. Boaz goes even further. Even if she strays in a little too far, leave her alone and don't embarrass her. Right? Don't rebuke her. And on top of that, from your bundles, pull some stalks out here and there. Throw them on the ground. Leave her for her to pick up. He went over and above the requirements of the law, right? This man of standing, this man of valor, this man who decided that he would be God's instrument, allow himself to be God's instrument in the very blessing that he had prayed for Ruth. So Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz. The Lord bless him, said Naomi to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. She added, that man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Can you almost see Naomi's face? Right? All of a sudden, she starts having that expectant hope. Wait a minute. Maybe. Right? She starts to have that kind of expectation that God might be doing something here. Right? And you know, and I was, you know, almost a little sarcastic in my mind with Naomi, like, oh, welcome to the party, you know, as I was reading it. I admit that's totally unfair because I've had those times in my life where I was so unhappy with my circumstances that I failed to even stop looking for God's blessing. I failed to look for God's blessing in my circumstances. And so she sees this. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers. And then Ruth goes on to tell her, he said, stay here. He said, work with my workers. Naomi told her, it would be good for you to go with the girls because in someone else's field you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley harvest and the wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So Ruth continues on under the protection of Boaz, under the provision of Boaz, in the sense that he didn't just hand her, prepared, threshed stuff to take home for her and for Naomi, but allowed her the opportunity to continue to work under his protection. And she does this for about 6 or 7 weeks. She does this through the whole barley harvest and through the wheat harvest. And it says, and she lived with her mother-in-law. It's worth noting, again, and I brought this up last week, one of my favorite things about this historical narrative is that in the interactions of God's people and in the work of God and the hand of God in the lives of those people, of his people, this historical account is very normative of life. Remember, this is one of those Old Testament books, Old Testament historical narratives that doesn't involve an audible voice from God, right? It doesn't involve God sending a prophet to be his mouthpiece to tell people what's happening and what's going on and what's going to happen. These people are simply living out their lives. They're simply functioning within their circumstances. And we see God's hand at work within their circumstances. But they just live out their lives, and it's very much like us. It is not normative for us to have God physically or verbally or audibly show up in the situation. One commentator writes this, unlike the emphasis of some today, the symptoms and effects of the life of faith are totally unspectacular. Unlike the emphasis of some today, the symptoms and effects of the life of faith are totally unspectacular. No one in the book, he's referring to the book of Ruth, no one in the book demands of God that he meet his or her needs. No one demands specific miraculous divine intervention on his or her own behalf. On the contrary, true covenant faith is expressed by concern for the welfare of others. So these people, even in the destitute circumstances, Ruth being one example, Ruth isn't demanding things of God and praying that God come in and miraculously intervene in her situation. She exercises her faith in being concerned for others, namely Naomi, right? And so very much like our lives, we have the benefit of hindsight as we read the book of Ruth that we can see God's hand in things, but I wonder sometimes in our lives, if we lived in faith and trusted in the Lord, would we be more apt to see the "it just so happened" type moments? Would we be more apt to recognize the "just then Boaz arrived," as it turns out, right? Would we be more apt to see those moments? So we have learned from this chapter about this character Boaz, and that he's a mighty man, that he's a man of standing, and he is so because, as Piper said, he is a God-saturated man. So in an effort to not preach the entire book this morning, I leave us with these thoughts. Are we so God-saturated in our personal lives and in our dealings with the people around us, in our business, in our families, that we not only sincerely seek to bless others, that we not only sincerely pray for blessing and good for others, but are we people with our eyes opened who recognize need, and not only recognize it, but act when we recognize that we have the ability to allow ourselves to be God's instrument to meet that need? And again, we learn from this chapter, we see in this chapter, the continued unfolding of God's providence, that though they were in horrible and destitute circumstance, whether by their own hand or God's alone, we recognize that God's hand was in it all the while nonetheless. And we're going to see now, as this story starts to turn, as Boaz has provided for Ruth and consequently for Naomi, we're going to see that God's going to use him to do even greater things than that, and that it is all by his design. Let me dismiss you with a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this morning, again, for the opportunity to look into your word. Father, I thank you for preserving this account for us, and I thank you for allowing us to see your hand at work in the circumstances and lives of nations and of individuals. We're encouraged, Father, that even though things around us in our lives can look very, very bleak, we can be confident at your hand in it. We can be confident that you are at work for the good of those who love you, and Lord, you are at work for your wonderful and divine purposes. Lord, help us to be God-saturated people who pay attention to these things, Lord, and that when we are in times of trouble, that we find our rest under the shelter of your wings, and that we seek it only there. And that when we are in times of, have times of plenty and blessing, that we would have our eyes open to those around us to see ways in which we can be your instruments for blessing. We love you. We thank you most of all for your Son, and we ask your blessing as we part ways this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.